here for argument in the case of Mensarek versus the people, and the petitioner may proceed.
Thank you, Your Honor. Good afternoon. My name is Joseph Huff. I'm with the Public Defender's Office, and I represent the defendant, Darkin Baryard Temensereg. My registration number is 34384, by the way. I wanted to start off by saying that I was struggling with this at first, how best to frame it, because in my opinion, it was kind of confusing. But I think the easiest way to proceed on the first issue in the cert question is to determine whether or not this was either structural error or was it plain or harmless. And the way to get to that is, in my opinion, comparing the Medina v. People case and the Griego v. People case to this case and compare and contrast the differences between them, because this case is more like Medina, then it's clearly going to be structural error, and we don't have to proceed to any sort of harm analysis. If, however, it's more closely akin to the Griego case, we're going to have to engage in a harmless or plain error analysis. So first of all, I want to talk a little bit about Medina and why I think this case and the facts of this case are more akin to that than they are Griego. First of all, in Medina, there's basically four factors in Medina that convince the court that it was structural error in that case and not subject to harmless error analysis or plain error. The first issue was that the information never charged the particular element. And in this case, we have a case where the particular element physically was never charged. True, aiding and abetting was charged, but our position is that was just consistent with the fact that this was a complicity theory case. And in complicity, aiding and abetting is necessarily included in order to be a complicitor. So first of all, yes, Judge Cope.
I was just going to say, right there, there was one part I had trouble resolving in the briefs and didn't go look at the record yet. Did the charge itself specify the statutory subsection that involved the enhancer?
I believe it did have the actual statutory number, but as far as the language and the information omitted or was not present physically, rather it just said aided or abetted.
And I think part of the problem in Medina too involved a sort of a question about whether the defendant knew he was obliged to defend against the level of felony that was involved. Did this one in the charge specifically set out the felony level that was being charged?
I believe it did.
Okay.
And that's the fourth factor that I was going to talk about, because that's the one that actually does cut against us in this case. The other three factors in Medina, I think, weigh in our favor. So the first one is the information, just like here, never charged specifically the element of physically aiding and abetting. Medina also had a situation where the jury was never instructed on this. Just like in this case, the jury was never instructed that they must find the physically element of this proven beyond a reasonable doubt. The third one was there was no verdict in Medina, and there was no verdict here on that specific aggravator of multiple assailants and the physical aspect. Now, as to Judge Coates' concern, in Medina, there is a distinguishing factor because all the parties were on the same page. They all believe they were proceeding on a Class 5 felony. In this case, we either don't know or we can assume from sentencing, because the parties never objected, that parties thought this was a Class 2 as well. But that's not really where the analysis turns, in my opinion, because it's not what the parties thought or did not think. It's what the jury decided or did not decide.
I'm just trying to track your argument here that counts have the word physical in them. What am I missing?
Well, it never charged the word physically aided and abetted, which is the aggravator that would elevate what would ordinarily be a Class 4 felony to a Class 2 felony. So the term physically aided and abetted was never there. And the reason that's crucial here is because that was a disputed fact. Number one, we disputed that he never physically aided and abetted, and the jury's verdict is pretty consistent with that as well, because they found that he was menacing and fighting with another individual in another room as the sex assault was taking place by the principal in a separate room. Yes, Your Honor.
What is the agreement or disagreement on those facts?
Well,
what was really at issue in the case?
Well, what?
So we got four men.
Right.
They're all getting together for an evening of playing board games and drinking. Maybe in the other order. And two of them end up in an assault in the bathroom, I guess, and the other two are in a different room?
Well, at trial, we contended that my client and another gentleman who were in a separate room away from the sex assault, that was distinct from the sex assault. The prosecution argued, however, and the jury believed that our client was distracting this individual in another room so he couldn't come to the aid of the guy who was getting raped. And the jury actually, consistent with their verdict, they determined that that was true, that the prosecution's distraction theory was actually what occurred.
He was distracting him by fighting with him?
Fighting with him, and they also found that he menaced the person in the other room with a deadly weapon.
And was that the knife? There was a knife involved somehow in this, as I remember. Okay. Go ahead. I didn't mean to derail your argument.
So, as I said, the Medina case is slightly distinct in that all parties in the Medina case apparently believed that they were proceeding under a Class 5 felony. But the big distinction here is that in this case, the aggravator was never charged. There was never a verdict on it. The jury was never instructed on it. And crucially, the parties never argued about this aggravator. It wasn't as if, this was a non-issue and the parties were informing the jury that they had to find that there was physical aiding and abetting in order to find a completed crime here. The parties never even mentioned physically aiding and abetting. And importantly, the prosecution, as noted in Judge Voigt's dissent, never contended that the physically aiding and abetting could be attributed to what happened with my client and the separate gentleman in the other room with the knife. That was never argued by the prosecution.
Excuse me.
Yes, ma'am.
Wasn't there, I thought when I was reading the brief, I got some sort of an argument that the defendant actually helped out in the commission of the sexual assault by helping to disrobe the victim, pulling his shirt up above his head so he couldn't use his hands or something like that?
The prosecution had two theories of prosecution. One was that Klein actually was in the room and participated in the sex assault. The other theory was he was not in the room, but yet prevented someone from going to the aid of the rape victim. The jury, by virtue of the verdict, dismissed the first theory, and that's even in the Court of Appeals opinion, they acknowledged that. The jury went with the second theory, which was the distraction theory. Client didn't actually physically participate in the sex assault with the other gentleman, but he did distract the would-be savior, and therefore he was guilty under conspiracy theory.
And how do we know that the jury went for that theory?
Well, I think it's pretty obvious from the way the jury's verdict read, but they found him not guilty of physical force or physical violence, they found him not guilty of use, possession, or threatening a deadly weapon during the assault. I think it's pretty much agreed by the parties that the jury did not find that defendant was actually in the room present and assisting in the sexual assault, whether he was in a separate room preventing aid from coming to the person who was getting sexually assaulted.
Are you taking the position that the aggravator should have done a specific finding? Should there have been a verdict?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
It should have been an interrogatory, and it wasn't.
Well, was it asked for? Did you ask for it?
We did not ask for it. And that's why I'm moving to the other one, because the Court of Appeal, even in Judge Vogt's dissent, she wouldn't agree that it was structural error, although we think it is because it's more akin to the Medina case. But Judge Vogt said, look, it's not structural error. It is plain because she classified it as an omission of an element as opposed to just failure to charge one. But she said under that standard, which is slightly different in this context than the normal plain error standard, it just requires a reasonable possibility that the error contributed to the conviction. And she found that clearly, based upon the jury's verdicts, they found that defendant was in the other room menacing the other gentleman, and that prevented the other gentleman from helping the victim, but that the jury could easily find that that wasn't sufficient enough to constitute physically aiding and abetting. And that gets into the sufficiency argument, which is this court or the Court of Appeals have never found that physically aiding or abetting can be something so remote as a distraction theory, for instance. It's always the other guy held the victim's arms down. The other guy held a knife to the victim. The other guy participated physically in the sexual assault. And that simply didn't happen here. So Judge Vogt makes two points. First of all, she says she disagrees with me. She says it's not structural, but it is plain. And under plain, she finds it's reversible. I think that's a reasonable conclusion. She also finds that basically as a matter of law, what the jury found Mr. Tmentsereg to have done was not sufficient to constitute physically aiding and abetting, consistent with the other cases that have dealt with that and have required some actual physical contact, undressing the victim, pinning the victim down, holding a knife to the victim, also participating in the sexual penetration of the victim. That just didn't happen here. And so she says, even if it's plain, it's reversible. And what's more, there's a sufficiency problem as well.
Real quick, clarify just one question. Yes, when you said right at the end there, you said there was no interrogatory. And that was another thing I wasn't clear about from the brief. Is it there was no interrogatory that said physically, yes, or there was just no interrogatory?
There were interrogatories concerning other elements, like...
Was there one that said aiding and abetting, but just didn't say physically aiding and abetting? Did they find separately aiding and abetting?
You know, I think aiding and abetting is encompassed within the conspiracy instruction, and they did find... In the complicity instruction, and they did find on the theory of complicity that client was complicitous. Insofar as physically aiding and abetting, as far as I know, there was never any interrogatory on that or even on aiding and abetting. I could be wrong on that point.
Well, there is a finding, though. Would the jury unanimously find beyond a reasonable doubt that the defendant was aided and abetted by some other person?
The crucial part is that the word physically is missing. If you just have aided and abetting, that's entirely consistent with complicity. And that was what the prosecution's theory was, is that this was, our guy was the complicitor. So we're saying that, yeah, that's fine. The jury's just being consistent with their complicity verdict. Would they have, however, found beyond a reasonable doubt that client physically aided and abetted the sex assault?
The defendant didn't ask that that word be added, right?
That's true. That's why Judge Vogt looks at this as a plain error analysis as opposed to a structural one. But even she says, even under plain error, there's definitely a reasonable possibility that the jury could have disagreed about whether client's actions were sufficient enough to constitute physical aiding and abetting and not just aiding and abetting in a generic complicitor.
Be clear, the concept of physically aiding and abetting, as distinguished from aiding and abetting, was not included in the jury verdict and also in the jury instruction, correct?
Correct.
It was, however, in the charging document, correct?
The word physically was not.
It was not.
No. And that's why we're arguing this is partially structural error. Well, this is structural error akin to Medina, because just in Medina, that was not charged.
How was it charged here?
It wasn't charged at all. It just said aiding and abetting. But it never said physically aiding and abetting. Aiding and abetting is consistent with a complicity theory, though, which is what the prosecution proceeded under.
But you did say in the charge, it did say a class 2 felony, and it did specifically reference the subsection.
I believe that it did.
For the enhancer physically aiding
and like abetting. I said, it appears that parties were under the impression, given the sentencing, that it was a class 2 felony. But again, that to me is not nearly as important as what the jury actually weighed in on or did not weigh in on. So even if you evaluate this as our mistake for not pointing that out, Judge Vogt says it's still reversible error because it was such a contested point and that the evidence was arguably insufficient to amount to physically aiding and abetting. If there are no other questions, I'm going to save the rest of my time for rebuttal. Thank you.
Thank you. Good afternoon, Your Honors. May it please the court. My name is Catherine Hansen. I'm appearing on behalf of the people in this matter. My registration number is 25464. Your Honors, at no point during the proceedings in this case, at trial or at sentencing, did any of the parties, including the trial court, express any confusion about the fact that the defendant was charged with and convicted of sexual assault as a Class 2 felony under the aiding and abetting enhancer. Just to clarify a few of the facts, there was in the jury, in the information, it was specifically classified as a Class 2 felony. However, there was no specific reference to subsection 5, which is the enhancer. So they did not reference a specific subsection. However, again, they specified it as a Class 2 felony, and they did set forth the elements of sex assault, and they did go on to say in the information, the charging document, and the defendant and Kozlan were aided and abetted by another person. The word physically was not in the information. However, I think it's clear from this record, there is absolutely no confusion from the parties that he was being charged with and that he had been convicted of the Class 2 felony.
What does the statute say? Does it use the word physical?
Aiding and abetting by another person. So we've agreed that the word physically should have been in the information. The word physically should have been in the interrogatory. There was an interrogatory. There was the elements. There was the complicity instruction. The jury found sex assault under a lesser. They didn't find force or violence. They found by sufficient means or sufficient consequences. But there was a separate interrogatory that they had to consider once they found the defendant guilty of sex assault.
You're talking just about the jury verdict form, aren't you? Not anything different than that?
Yes.
The second page of the jury verdict form?
Yes. Okay. The jury verdict form on the second page of sex assault, it said if you find him guilty of sex assault, then you must consider, and it had two interrogatories. One was whether they find unanimously beyond a reasonable doubt that the defendant was aided and abetted by some other person. And then there was a second interrogatory concerning the use of a deadly weapon. So it was separated. It was specified. It was exactly as it should have been as a sentence enhancer, except the omission of the word physically. And that's one of the reasons why this was clearly a sentence enhancer. That distinguishes this case from Medina. In Medina, there was the elements of the offense of accessory, and then the way the accessory statute is set out is it's a class, there's the elements of the subset of offense, and then it's a class 5 felony if the person you're assisting is suspected of committing a crime, and then it's a class 4 if the person you're assisting is, you know, they committed a crime. It's similar to like the theft statute where the elements or the offense are in subsection 1 and the enhancers. And these are factors that relate to the sentence enhancer and the class of felony. And so in that case, however, the information didn't look either. It just had this stuff that was in number one, the elements that were in number one.
So, excuse me, so then are you agreeing with Judge Vogt at least so far as she thinks that this is plain error?
Absolutely. Okay. I think this is distinguishable from Medina on every respect.
Okay.
Not only of the information, it's distinguishable in that in Medina they started off with an instruction. Even at the beginning of the trial, the prosecution tendered an instruction listing the elements of the class 5, the suspected of. And everybody agreed that was consistent with the presentation of the evidence, and it was consistent with the jury instructions. And the difference there is there was a full and complete instruction on the class 5 felony. Whereas here, it's not like we have a sentence enhancer for aiding and abetting and a separate sentence enhancer for physically aiding and abetting. If that was the case, we might have a Medina problem. But the only thing, it was not a complete interrogatory. It was not a complete instruction, but it only omitted the word physically. And that's why we fall under the Requenco and the Griego cases where we review this for plain error. And in this case...
Well, why doesn't this then, why wasn't he prejudiced by this?
Why wasn't it plain error?
Right.
Well, there's three reasons why it wasn't plain error. And basically, this court has recognized there's different ways it can be found not plain error. When the element is undisputed, when there's overwhelming evidence, and when jury verdicts otherwise correct or resolve the issue, ensuring that the jury made the factual determination. We have all three in this case. First, it's undisputed, not that, and I'm not suggesting that he conceded that he physically aided and abetted the rapist in this case, but he did not dispute that his aiding and abetting was physical, and that's the only omission here.
I don't understand the difference.
Well, his theory was that he didn't help at all. And the jury was asked to find, did he help? That's the aiding and abetting. So the only word, the only thing that's missing here is the physical. Was the aiding and abetting physical? And he did not argue, I aided and abetted, but it was physical.
What is physical in this sense anyway? The jury wasn't even given any kind of instruction about physical, obviously, because it wasn't even, they weren't even instructed on that right. Physical. But what is your position? Does that mean, you know, that he had to actually assist in the rape by holding someone down? Or I guess there's a case where it says some wife applauded, for example, while her husband was raping the children, but that wasn't physical. That. So where are you on that spectrum?
Well, I think the case, the Osborne case, provides some good guidelines. We certainly don't have a case out there that's like this. The Court of Appeals Beagle or Beigel case, that was a situation where they found that physically aiding and abetting was established by blocking the victim's escape. So that's clearly a situation, even though that case was reversed by this court on cert, it was for a different reason, and they didn't express any opinion whatsoever as to whether that would be sufficient or not. But they did recognize in the Court of Appeals in the Beagle case that blocking the escape, and that's similar to what was happening here. I think that the idea is that you have to have a physical act as opposed to verbal. You can't have something that is just cheering on, encouraging verbally, but it has to be physical, but the physical has to aid and abet. So just because someone's present and does something physical like clapping, that's not going to be enough either, because that's not doing anything to aid and abet. That's certainly encouraging, so it's sufficient for complicity.
You wouldn't be physically aiding and abetting if, say, for example, the defendant had just kept this third party from even coming into the apartment, said, oh, you know, let's just stay here and have another drink. I don't really know what's going on in the apartment. And the only difference is that he was in the apartment, but in the next room and having a fight with him.
Well, I think in your hypothetical, there's nothing physical. It's verbal.
If he fought him to stay in the bar, I'm sort of being absurd to make a point, I guess, or to clarify your point. If he hadn't gone into a fight with him to make him stay outside of the house, that would be physical?
I believe so.
So you're making the distinction that whether it's physical or verbal is what really counts.
Yeah, I think that's why there's that word physical in there.
Does the prosecution have to prove somehow that the defendant knew that the assault was occurring? So what's the intentionality there?
Well, I mean, certainly for complicity, yes. But physically aiding and abetting, I mean, I think it would be hard to establish that you're aiding and abetting someone when you don't even know what you're doing, because you don't know what's going on.
What was the defense presented here? What was the dispute? Was the defense just that those two were having their own fight?
Well, it seemed like there was quite a few arguments being made, one of which, because the prosecution had proceeded on both the theory of aiding and abetting by, you know, having the fight and using the knife to keep him from intervening and stopping the sex assault. But they also, there was evidence that, some evidence that the defendant held down the arms and provided a knife to the person that was committing the sex assault.
So I interrupted just there, because mm-hmm. I read the closing arguments, and what makes it very confusing and difficult to apply the whole idea of plain error, as some of this discussion, I think, illuminates, is that the real theory of the prosecution was what the victim said, which is that that the defendant held him down, held his pants down while the rape occurred. That's what was, I mean, you're right, they mentioned the knife business, but fundamentally that was what they argued. And nobody ever argued about aiding and abetting in the sense that we're talking about it today, right?
I actually disagree. I went through the closing arguments at length, and I think I found at least three places, and that's why I disagree with Judge Vogt's statement, that no one ever argued this knife to...
Well, they did argue that, but I mean, the primary argument was what the victim said, which was holding down the pants or whatever, something like that.
I believe they argued both.
Yeah.
And I think if you look at...
Well, was it presented alternatively, though? I mean,
yes.
And was the argument that this counts for both in terms of aiding and abetting, but...
They didn't specifically separate out the aiding and abetting for the complicity from the aiding and abetting in the sentence enhancer. They did. I mean, and basically, there's no reason the same fact can't establish both. And so they didn't really need to. So if you look, I mean, just as one example, in volume 14, which is the closing arguments on page 40, when they're talking about the defendant being guilty of the sex assault as a complicitor, they talk about what evidence, they're talking about the element of intent to promote and facilitate the rape. They talk about what other intent could you have if you hold somebody's hands while they're being raped, which is the first theory. And then right next, what other intent could you have if you're trying to keep another person from stopping that rape? If you look at, there's a discussion about both, about the use of the knife and holding him away in connection with the sex assault on page 39, where they're talking about what do we have that shows his guilt as a complicitor? Well, what we have is Mr. Tumensereg committed part of the crime in terms of holding the knife to keep Mugi away, which he did. And so I think, and then also you have, at the beginning of the closing arguments, you have some discussion about how complicitor theory works and the fact that it's like the person who is at the candy store and causes a disruption to allow the theft to continue and the person to get away. And so he uses that example, and then later in page 41 or 40 and 41, when they're talking again about the defendant's guilt as to the sex assault under the complicity theory, he again says the defendant is the one who was the guy in the candy store who's on the side pushing the cart over to distract. I mean, he doesn't go into that detail, but I mean, at least three places they talk about that. Clearly, the use of the knife, the distraction to prevent Mugi, and I apologize for using his nickname, that his full name is difficult to pronounce, but...
Ms. Hansen, I just want to repeat something. There's clearly the question is or concerns whether this defendant aided and abetted the rape by the other individual, correct?
Mm-hmm.
Well, I was just looking at the jury verdict form that you referenced earlier, and the language that's actually there is not only skips the physically, but it also seems to be kind of reversed. It says, we the jury unanimously find beyond a reasonable doubt that the defendant was aided and abetted by some other person.
Mm-hmm.
So it appears to me that the jury's finding is that someone else aided and abetted the defendant, as opposed to a finding that the defendant aided and abetted someone else in the missing physically. But can you clarify that for me, please?
Yes, this is why it's a little bit tricky in the context of complicity, where you have the defendant is clearly the complicitor, or at least according to the jury's findings. And actually, in the closing argument, the prosecutor attempted to explain that and say, you have the defendant was aided and abetted by another person, and the prosecutor said, in the context of this case, you actually flip that, and you find that the defendant aided and abetted the person. And so it's, the prosecutor clarified that, and I realize it is a little bit weird in the context of complicity. But in essence, what they're doing here is they're finding him guilty of the sexual assault. And the enhancer is if the sexual assault is physically aided and abetted by one or more persons. And so he's, in essence, being found guilty of the sexual assault and then being found of being basically the person, just as responsible as the person who committed the sexual assault, as well as the person who did the aiding and abetting.
Did they make the same argument then with respect to the crime itself, that the factual basis for sex assault by means of sufficient consequence was either holding the pants down or having the fight in the next room?
Well, I don't think they really talked that much in the closing argument about the lesser offense. I think that they...
That's what he was convicted of.
That was what he was convicted
of. So what's the factual basis for that? It has to be the same as the aiding and abetting, I would think. Because he wasn't convicted of physical force or physical violence.
Right. I think by the jury's verdict, they found that the nature in which the sexual assault occurred was not by force or violence. Perhaps they weren't sure if you know, he was really being forcefully held down. And again, I'm not that as familiar with the lesser offense by means of sufficient consequence, but that the sexual assault itself was accomplished by that way. And that the defendant's conduct in this case satisfied the requirements of a complicitor.
It's not a lesser offense. It's still,
an alternate theory.
Right. It's an alternate
theory. It's And it's the defendant who did that, who was found guilty of sexual assault by means of sufficient consequence.
As an aider.
Essentially as a complicitor.
Right.
Because I don't think there was any allegation that he committed the penetration himself.
Sure. At which point does this get circular? I mean, it seems we're already kind of there.
Well, I mean, if you look at the Court of Appeals cases that have dealt with this in the context, and Osborne is one, they've recognized you can have complicity, and you can have guilt of the substantive offense as a complicitor. And then also, because of the nature of the defendant's actions, he also, essentially his aiding and abetting was physical. So basically that's what they found, is they found that he was guilty of the sex assault by aiding and abetting or advising, encourage, any of the theories under complicity. They found that he had the mental state required for complicitor. But they also found that his very conduct also satisfied the requirement that he aided and abetted. And yes, we don't have the word physical, so we don't have a specific finding in this interrogatory that it was physical, but that's where we get to the other issues, is does the omission of that instruction mean that we don't have a jury finding, or we don't have a violation of his due process rights? And here, the only thing was missing was physical. So we have.
Well, let's back up though. It would be a class 4, the sexual assault itself?
Yes.
Okay, so it takes the aggravator to go to class 2 felony.
Yes.
And that's the physical.
Yes.
Part of it.
Yes. So essentially, I think the idea is, because, and the courts have interpreted physical as actual presence as well, I think the courts recognize this statute is intended to punish more harshly rapes that involve multiple persons, gang rapes. I think that's the language they use even in the Osborne case. And so for complicity, you don't have to do something physical to assist in that. You don't even have to be present necessarily to be convicted of sex assault under complicity theory. However, for you to be subject to the harsher penalty of the class 2 felony, you have to be present and you have to do something physical to aid and abet. And the General Assembly has determined that in those circumstances, it warrants a harsher penalty.
Actually, just one more. I think, you know, this whole last series just jumps around this. Osborne's been there a while, but the part that is sort of counterintuitive about Osborne is that the Court of Appeals construed the statute to mean that if you aid and abet somebody, a rapist, then that elevates his crime from a 4 to a 2. But then you're guilty of the 2 as well because you aided and abetted somebody who was guilty of a 2. And that's the part that seems a little strange. I'm curious, do you know, has anybody else, I mean, I know Osborne's been around quite a while, but has there ever been a split, or has this court ever dealt with the fundamental question that this aggravator can apply not only to a rapist who is assisted by somebody else, but also to the person who assisted him?
I believe in Osborne they did apply it under complicity because there was some question about whether it was there. And I believe I cited that case in my brief. It may be either Naranjo or Warren, I'm not exactly sure. But that specifically, it's Court of Appeals, it specifically stated that the theories of complicity can apply in conjunction with the aggravator. So we only have one case from this court even addressing the statute at all, and it didn't address that issue.
So if, as far as the Court of Appeals has dealt with it, they're in line with Osborne, and there's no
change. Thank you, Your Honor.
Just briefly, I just want to address a few things that the Assistant Attorney General said. First of all, I think it's very clear from the verdict that the jury believed this distraction theory and that they believed that the defendant didn't actually physically participate in the other room. That's why they acquitted him of using physical force or physical violence. They acquitted him of using, possessing, or threatening a deadly weapon during the assault. In my mind, the jury saw these as two distinct episodes, but they were connected in a complicity sense. The jury saw that my client, Mr. Tementzereg, was in another room fighting Mugi and preventing Mugi from going to the aid of the victim here. And I think Judge Vogt's point is, under those facts, if we have that as basically a given based on the jury's findings, that it very easily could have been disputed among the jurors, and there's a reasonable possibility that they would have not found that distraction theory was sufficient enough to constitute the physical aiding and abetting, like an ordinary quote-unquote gang rape would be when everybody's there participating in the gang rape of the victim, as opposed to being separated temporally and approximately. Thank you.
On behalf of the court, I thank both counsel for the arguments. Case stands submitted.